Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
This is To The Point, a Rhino experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's the host of To The Point Home Services Podcast, Cristiano, along with my co-host, Mr. Tall Paul Redman. Tall Paul, what's up, buddy?
Yano, my man, always good to see you. You're looking fresh. You got a good haircut. I've known you long enough to know when you look like you're ready to go. And today you look like you are ready to go.
Doesn't it just feel better when you get a haircut? Like my hair was really long for me. I got a haircut last night. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to spend the 15 minutes it takes, but man, I feel so good afterwards.
And I didn't expect you to notice, but I got mine cut too.
Yeah, no, you can't tell. It still looks like fluffy.
I know.
No, thanks. Well, like listen,
my personality.
enough about haircuts. So listen, we have a guest on the show today that actually, I think we met during the beginning of COVID. Actually, I'm pretty sure, because I think I remember somewhere around there. And it was this guy's been in the industry a long time. And we know all the same. After I talked to him for like an hour and a half or whatever, I realized we know a lot of the same people. But he's been in the industry a long time. A lot of success, a lot of coaching, so I'm excited to have our guest on today. And I'm going to get into it because we have a lot of questions that we want to ask to tap into all those years of knowledge and experience and also of working with some of the biggest and brightest, you know, in the industry, not just in the United States of America, but really all over because, I mean, you've been in Australia. So there's been a lot going on. So I've learned some interesting things about that, but we'll talk through that. So quickly, I want to bring on our guest, Joe Cunningham. And Joe is, you're in Houston, right?
That's right. I'm in Houston.
He's in Houston, Texas. So, but Joe's in Houston, Texas. He has a company down there called Your Air, which is the pink fleet with the hearts on it.
Right. That's right. That's it.
Pretty recognizable. He's also the president of Success Track Network and the founder of Technical Arts Center. Done a ton of consulting, coaching, and things like that in the industry for a long time. So first and foremost, Joe, hey, welcome to The Point.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's an honor to be on here. I've listened to some of your podcasts, and I've seen some of the people you've had on here. You've had some really great people.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been super fortunate to have great guests on here too. So, and we're excited to have you on as well. Now, listen, I know that you are the pride of Central High School in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Is that correct?
I guess you could have called me the pride. I was there. But I don't know that pride was the right
Hey, well, nobody else needs to know the difference.
Yep, that's right.
Legend. Hey, so I saw something, because we're friends on Facebook, that you are into, before we get into it, just because I saw this. So you had some success here recently with Tomcat Smoke. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. My family and I, we raise horses and cattle, and we show horses and cattle. And over the years, I've had a lot of really nice horses. And the horse you're referring to, Tomcat Smoke, is a colt that we raised. I rode his mother. I won the world on her three times in working cow horse. My son won the world on her three times in working cow horse and once in reining. And now this was her first baby that we showed, and this is his first... Well, third time after show, first big show, and he was reserve world champion at the Paint World Show about a week ago. So we're really proud and really excited with this horse. And then we've got another full brother of his coming along. So the horse business is a lot of fun, kind of an expensive hobby, but it is a lot of fun if that's what you enjoy. And we're really proud of that little horse.
Yeah, the equine industry is big bucks.
And Chris rides horses.
Oh, does he?
He does. My best memory of Chris on a horse was traveling in the backwoods of Wyoming, and his horse, just out of nowhere, after it bucked, tried to buck me off my horse, just stops in the middle of a river and dumps Chris in the middle of the river. Just, no cause.
He might have thought he was getting a little overheated.
That must have been it.
That's it.
He landed real well. I'd have been out of work for a week.
Yeah, that. But. That was a.
They're a lot of fun. Our whole family does that, and we really, really enjoy it. And now we've got the third generation coming along and showing. So we're really excited about that as well.
Love it. Hey, fun fact. I was on the PRCA, Rodeo Cowboy Association Turquoise Circuit as a bull rider for 2 years. Did you know that, Joe?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I did not know.
I did. Those were the poorest years.
What made you stop that?
What's that?
What made you quit that?
Well, a few things. One, I had a daughter, so that puts a damper on things. And two, I was as broke as you can get. So apparently, the rodeos, I won three rodeos while I was in my thing, but three rodeos in 2 years don't pay a whole lot. So
no, it does.
But it was. But I've got the experiences and a broken sternum and a broken wrist to go along with it, and that was enough for me to bail out. So anyhow, fun fact, I was on the bull riding circuit. If you guys ever go in my office and look, you'll see it on the couple pictures in there too. That's the only memories I have. I'll tell you what, bull riders. This is what's tough about bull riders is they always want to fight. So I had so many fights over stupid stuff. Like I'm glad that my life. I've got great memories. I'm glad that stuff is over. So everybody's a tough guy. Everybody's a tough guy.
Yep, goes with the territory.
So let's. What's that? Why are you gonna
say that? I'm trying to imagine my gangly self on a bull being tossed around the arena. What that would look like a giraffe sitting on top of a bucking bull.
It works better with short people.
Yeah, because
shorter upper body.
Balance is pretty key. Okay, let's get into this too. Yeah. Everybody on this podcast right now is like, what the hell are we listening to? Okay, so let's go ahead and hop into it, because obviously you've been in the industry a long time and worked with a lot of very successful companies and done a lot of coaching, and you still do. So I want to go into, and I want you to let our listeners know, just kind of tell us your story on how you get into the trades and kind of like your whole, like, I guess your whole path, and then where you're at and what you're doing today.
Okay. Well, to begin with, if you had ever asked me when I was back at Beautiful Central High School if I would ever have been doing anything like this, I would have told you no. You know, my aspirations when I was in high school was to become a blacksmith and a horse trader. And I rodeoed as well. So, you know, I had to make some switches. And I did that for quite a while. And then I had an uncle that was a licensed plumber. So I worked for him. And he was really the first person I worked for in the trades. You know, I did work when I was little, because when you're little and you have an uncle that's a plumber, you're kind of enslaved at an early age. So I was enslaved in the plumbing side, and I found out I really didn't like digging ditches enough to stay in there. So I wanted to move out laterally a little bit. So I went to work in the carpentry business, and I had a framing company. We did framing, and we helped build houses. And from framing, I went into the home improvement business, which really changed my mind on what I wanted to do. You know, I went into the home improvement business through the technical side by doing it, but then I also got involved in the sales side, because when I first did it, I knew how to do it real well. I just didn't know how to sell it or price it or anything else.
Sure.
I just gave them a price that sounded good. So I went to work for a real home improvement company, and they taught me, number one, how to canvas, which was probably the most valuable skill that a person could ever be taught. You know, there was no internet back then, so they hired me as a canvasser. And a canvasser is somebody that goes door to door and knocks on doors and begs people to let a salesman come in and sell them something. And I had an extremely good salesman teach me how to do that. And I moved from canvassing to selling. Well, when I did that, I was actually living in Rochester, New York at that time, and I found out I didn't like Rochester in the winter worth a damn.
I don't blame
you. And I had to get out of there. So I ended up going to Florida. And from Florida, I worked in the home improvement business a little bit more. And then I went back up to the Washington, D.C. area, which was kind of an in-between point. And I did pretty well in the home improvement business there. And then I moved to Houston. And when I moved to Houston was the biggest boom town I'd ever seen in my life. I've never seen a place like this. and it was really easy to find a lot of work. So I went to work for a home improvement company. I sold for them. Then I left and went out on my own. And I was selling home improvements, roofing, kitchen, bathrooms, siding, things like that. And then I accidentally sold an air conditioning system. We were working on a house, put on a big room addition. And the lady said, you know, Joe, the air conditioner didn't work too well in here last year. I know the air conditioner is not going to work good with this big room addition. Can you put one in for me? So I told her, I don't know if you can, I can or not, but I knew the guy that framed for me. He had a brother in the air conditioning business. So I called him up. He gave me a price. I charged her $1,000 profit. She said she'd pay it. I thought, damn, this is a good business. So he taught me a little bit about it, not very much, probably just about enough to be dangerous, you know, because he charged me by the ton to install because he was a new construction contractor. And I think I probably paid him about $700 a ton back then to supply the equipment and install it because I had no connections with buying equipment. I had nothing. I subcontracted everything I was doing out, including my first install. So when he told me the price and I figured out I could sell this in these neighborhoods because I was working in neighborhoods that didn't have central air in all the houses. They were still window unit neighborhoods because they were just little old frame houses built back in the 50s and 60s. So I just started selling air conditioners like I did home improvements, going door to door. And I found out it was pretty easy because these neighborhoods were totally being ignored by the air conditioning business. You know, and since I came from the home improvement business, I knew that the people that lived in these houses had money and they were buying stuff, you know, and they were buying siding and they were buying windows and they were buying roofs and they were buying carports, but they still had a window air conditioner out there. So I saw some opportunities. And when I talked to an air conditioning contractor, they tell me, you know, we don't go in there. Those people don't have any damn air conditioning. Why would we go in a neighborhood with no air conditioning? And I thought that was really a dumb question. That's like the two shoe salesmen that got sent to Africa and they one sent a letter back and said, this is the worst territory I've ever been to in my life. Nobody here even wears shoes. And the other guy sent another message back and said, this is the greatest place in the world I could ever be because nobody has any shoes. So I looked at it as nobody has any air conditioning and I need to help them. And that's what I did. And I just started knocking doors every day. I had three subcontractors that subcontracted from me. And that's what I did. And it worked because I looked at things differently. And I also didn't have the preconceived price issue. See, when I started in the 80s, most of the contractors had what I called the $3,000 price hump. You know, they thought that nobody would ever pay more than $3,000 for a system. But nobody told me that when I started. So I charged $6,000 for a system. And I was selling more than most of them sold. And then I learned, you know, I'd also sell insulation because the houses weren't insulated. So my tickets were fairly high. And closing ratio was real high. It was just you had to get out there every single day and, you know, knock on those doors. And when you'd knock on the doors, the people were there and they would talk to you. And I found out if they talked to you and let you in the house, it was pretty easy to sell those things. So that's what I did. It got a lot of attention from the manufacturers and distributors. They all wanted to come by and sell me air conditioning because they heard I was selling a lot of it. And they just found that out through the installers because I wasn't buying anything. But the installers told them who I was and they wanted to sell me equipment. Well, I didn't want to buy any equipment because I didn't have any installers. I didn't have any techs. I didn't have anything. I just sold it. So that's what I did. And that's kind of how I got started. But coming in from another industry and looking at it differently made me see opportunities I guess other people had just overlooked. And that's what it was then. You know, today, $1 million is not a big deal. You know, we have prices that are higher. It's not unusual to sell $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 systems. You know, and I'm looking on the forums and I'm seeing some guys selling a system. Well, they're selling air conditioning. I don't think they're selling one system, but maybe they are, you know, for $80,000 and $100,000. Well, if I'm selling $80,000 systems, that makes $1 million a lot easier to hit.
For sure.
You know, so now we've got guys that are out there selling $2, $3, $4, $5, $6, $8, $10 million, which is absolutely amazing. But you know, when we were doing it with the prices we had, it would have been a little tougher. and they have lead generation. Now, I didn't know what lead generation was. You know, I came from an industry where they just told you to go sell. You had to find your own leads. You had to find your own jobs. Then you had to sell it. Then you brought the deal back. And then you got some money for doing that. So this whole finding leads thing was a total different animal to me. I didn't understand that either.
So you were known as one of the first million-dollar salespeople in the 80s.
Yep.
But mm-hmm. that $1 million today looks like what? Like, what would you compare that to?
Well, you know, if I took a look at the average sale and what we do now, that would probably be equivalent to about $3.5-4 million.
Got it.
You know, maybe a little bit more. You know, I'd have to do the sure. price conversion on what it was. But, you know, if I take a look at what I sold then, when I sold the full system and I insulated the house, and a lot of times there was an electrical upgrade or something that went with it. So, you know, that would be, you know, that would probably be closer to $4.5 million.
So
five.
Which is a big deal. That's incredible. So that's a big number. Now I can hear right now, because we have a wide variety of listeners, that some people are going to think, well, the '80s, what's that got to do with today? It's, you know, 2021. I think there's probably, and at least from what I've heard too, is there's still a lot of principles in place today that work, you know, really well in sales. And that is, like, you went out, you chose to look at it differently. You looked at it, like you said, nobody has shoes, I'm going to sell them shoes. Nobody has air conditioning, I'm going to sell them air conditioning. But you actually had to go and, like, we're not even talking lead generation. You went out and worked for it. Like, you actually had to go out and grind, mm-hmm. and, you know, and put in the time and the effort. And that is completely, like, let's face it, like, today is no different. It's still the effort you put into this. You know, like, what are you willing to do to get it? That's a big number. So what is what does today's $1 million salesperson look like? Like, I mean, or whatever, like anything, it's anybody who can sell $1 million, what does that person look like?
You know, we do several training programs. And one of the things that I do is, you know, a lot of people ask me that, you know, what do I have to do to sell $1 million? Because that, you know, that used to be the milestone everybody's trying to hit, although a lot of people have overcome that. You know, so I just break it down. You know, if you take everything and break it down, $1 million sales guy is a guy that will run 2 leads a day, 6 days a week. Two of them are going to crap out for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, they have to take the kid to the ball game or get the cat fixed. I don't know where the hell they go. But two of them are going to crap out. You know, so that leads you 10. You have to be capable of closing 50% of the calls you go on. You know, and the closing ratio thing is what throws a lot of people off. You know, and closing ratio can be manipulated by your lead mix more than anything else.
Sure.
You know, if I have an air conditioning company, if I have a plumbing company, if I have any kind of company, and I'm depending on all call-in leads, Yellow Pages, which some people still use, and some of the Google leads, because all Google did for the plain Google leads is they took the Yellow Pages out of alphabetical order and made you pay to be on in the A slot instead of the Z spot. So, you know, when they did that, and I can go on there, and a lot of people say, oh, no, the Facebook leads, the Google leads, those are all much better. Well, there's two kind of Google leads. You know, there's, I want to buy an air conditioner, so I go on there and I just put air conditioner near me, and this list comes up, and that one looks okay. Well, what the hell difference is that in the Yellow Pages? You know, you don't know anybody. You know, the good Google leads are, he's got a good position. I know this guy to learn about more about the company, and I keep punching the buttons. That's a totally different lead. But so you've got this big variety of leads. You've got Yellow Page leads. You've got Google leads. You've got direct mail leads. You've got Facebook leads. You've got all this other stuff. But the guy's going to have to be able to close 50% in this mix. And to get a guy to consistently get 50%, there has to be some input from the company. And the techs have to bring some leads to the table as well, because the techs are very high closing. Yep. So you get the guy at 50% closing ratio. So if he actually sees 10 people and he's got a 50% closing ratio, he's going to sell 5 jobs. Well, then we have to come up with average ticket and we have to have real world average ticket. You know, because when I hear these people say, well, my salesman has a $10,000 average ticket. That's true in some cases. Some guys have a $20,000 average ticket, but I'm taking a look at the $1.5 million, $2 million, $3 million company, because that salesman in his position, and that's the most of the people that we're looking at, you know, they're going out there because the tech doesn't know how to sell this one thing, and it ends up being a $400 call. And then he'll go and sell a condenser only over here and a furnace only over there. And then he hits the home run with the full system. But if you take a look at it, if the guy sells 5 jobs a week, if he has a $4,000 average, he's going to sell $20,000 a week. If he takes 2 weeks off, he'll sell 50 weeks out of the year. He sold $1 million. You know, so that's what a $1 million sales guy is. But he has to be committed to going there twice a week. Now, when they begin to maximize and learn how to be a salesman rather than a bid dropper and a professional visitor, then they're upgrading and they're taking that $4,000 average sale and they learn to sell some indoor air quality. Then they learn how to sell the job with indoor air quality and take the guy and step him up from a 14 to a 16 or an 18 variable speed or a 20. And then they get their average sale up to where it's supposed to be $8,000 and $10,000, and then you got a guy that'll sell $5 million. So, you know, it's just all part of a formula and how much the guy maximizes. But that's kind of what a $1 million guy looks like.
Got it. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about here. But before we move on to ask some clarifying questions around what you just shared, I want to know, would canvassing still work today? And maybe it's not actual door-to-door canvassing. What does canvassing look like today? What's that thing that someone could be doing that they're not doing?
Well, everybody tries to speed this process up. So when I take a look at companies that are doing a good job with self-lead generation, number one, it starts with the techs and leaving things on the doors. You know, I used the Jerry Kelly Company in St. Charles, Missouri, Steve Miles Company, as a good example of a company that's really good at self-generating leads. They go out there and they put a hanger on the house on each side and the three across the street or four across the street. And they have to make their door hanger, which is really canvassing but not talking to anybody. It's just putting your info there. They don't use just a door hanger. You know, they use a recyclable grocery bag full of stuff so that people actually find value in it and they look. Now, canvassing today in neighborhoods as far as knocking doors, talking to customers, are the guys that are going out there in advance of the job sometime. And I've seen some contractors send a person out there to knock the 10 doors around there and say, hey, we're going to be installing a job in the next couple of days. In fact, it'll be whatever day it is. So you will see our truck here. We do our very best to clean up whenever we get done. But inadvertently, if it's a windy day, it might blow a little bit of trash away that we don't notice. So if you see anything out there, please give us a call. We'll be happy to get it if it's in your yard so we don't cause any commotion over there. And by the way, if you need anything, I'm Joe Cunningham from Your Air Conditioning Company. And here's my card. We'd love to make you our customer too. If there's anything I can help you with now, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. And they've got guys out there that are doing it. And, you know, it works. But canvassing is a numbers game. Right. You know, direct knocking on the doors, cold canvassing, still works in areas where there's a need. You know, there are still in virtually every city in the United States areas where there's still houses that are high window unit houses. So you go into those houses, you drive through the neighborhoods, and I tell lots of contractors, look at these houses, you should be in here. They say, what the hell are you talking about? Those people got window units. Look, that's a really raggedy window unit. It's even screwing up his brand new vinyl siding. Look at that. I said, well, you know, how much you paid for that vinyl? You paid $20,000 for the siding job. Then you got a $15,000 window replacement job. You got a $10,000 roof and a $15,000 carport and a new Cadillac and a window unit. So, I mean, suppose you showed up the day before the siding guy and said, today you get to make a choice. You get the choice to keep your family safer, cooler, healthier, and more comfortable and reduce your utility bills, or you won't have to paint your house again during your lifetime, which will probably be about twice, and the air conditioning's cheaper. Which one would you like? I mean, guess which one they'd have chosen, but they don't get the choice. We're not there. You know, and you take a look in your community and see who's out there killing it in windows and see what neighborhoods they're in. And some of those neighborhoods, they're still window unit neighborhoods. So why aren't you there knocking on the damn doors, at least on Saturday and in the evening when they're home? That's a good point. Those people will talk. All you got to do is knock on the door. And here's the thing about it. When you knock on a door and somebody comes there and they actually let you in, the closing is so easy because they already made the big first buy. They let you in. So canvassing will work today. You just need to pick the right spot.
Got it. Got it. Thank you. So I want to go back to a comment you made before I ask a question about IAQ, and this could tie in together, but you talked about a salesperson versus a professional visitor. How do you take that $1 million salesperson to a $4 million? And then what role does IAQ play in that? Where does that come into the mix?
Well, here's the thing. You know, as we take a look at all the houses we're working on, and most of the people that listen to this podcast aren't new construction contractors. They are replacement contractors. And one thing you notice when you walk into a house is builders build a house to sell, not to live in. So there are all kinds of shortcuts taken. And people have lived with these shortcuts for years, and they think that their house has to be the way it is because it's just been that way for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you and Chris and I lived in the same neighborhood, and we live in one of these subdivisions where all the houses are kind of about the same. I mean, there's two or three different floor plans, and they change the fronts, but it's the same friggin' house.
Yeah.
You know, so we have our annual 4th of July neighborhood get-together Christmas party. And I say, hey, Paul, sure is hot, isn't it? And what are you going to say at the 4th of July? Yeah, it's hotter than hell. And I say, you know what? Your house is just about like mine. Is that back bedroom back there, the littlest one in the back, is it always hot in your house? And what will you say? If your house is just like mine, you'll say, yeah, because it's the same jerk that put the air conditioning in there has put it in mine. And then Chris says, you know what? My house is just like that too. I guess it's just how the house is built. So you're never going to ask anybody to solve that problem because you don't know that it can be solved. Mm-hmm. But when I move from being a professional visitor and I go in and I talk to these customers and I ask him one simple question. If I had to ask which is the most uncomfortable room in the house, which one would you say? They'll tell me every time. Every time. And when they give me that room, then we always have something to talk about. And we go in there, we educate them why that room's bad. Well, indoor air quality and airflow all go together. You know, and the reason that room back there is uncomfortable is because there's no return in it. So now I'm going to get him to put a return in there, which means that he's going to need a new filter grill back here. And then he has another one. I'm going to have to add a return over there. And one's not getting up the airflow because I do an airflow analysis as well. So we're going to change that duct. This guy doesn't want filter grills all over his house. So I sell him upgraded filtration. I'm selling him upgraded filtration while we're walking around the house. I ask him who in the house suffers from allergies. Most they tell me that his kid does. So I'm going to be able to sell a UV light or whatever kind of filtration and air cleaning device you decide to be the good one. And it's easy. But you know, here's what happens. When you move from being a professional visitor to a salesperson, you do a better analysis and you uncover problems. People only buy a solution to a problem they know they have. And if you don't show them they've got a problem, why would they ever bring that up? And a lot of these guys sit in their office and say, damn, why didn't anybody ask me about a UV light? That's because they've never heard of it. They don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, why didn't they ask me to make the back bedroom more comfortable? Well, they didn't know that you could. You know, you've got to learn to look beyond that. And that brings in IAQ, which is so easy to add to every job. And when I add IAQ and the fixing the air side problems, it's an occurrence on almost every job. So if I add just one return and a media filter and the media cabinet and a UV light, I mean, we are up like $3,000 over the equipment. And because we focused on that and making this customer so comfortable, he doesn't even shop my equipment price.
Right.
He does business with me because I cared and I solved his problems. And that's the difference between being a professional visitor, somebody that goes by and quotes and hopes, and somebody that actually goes and solves problems.
Quotes and hopes.
I like that. I like it. So this is what you spend your time doing now. You're teaching and coaching people how to think like this and how to improve their performance working with homeowners.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. And, you know, through SuccessTrack Network, we do different training. We work with technicians and we work with business owners. I don't do any technician training as far as communication skills without getting the business owners involved. And then we have a trade school as well. And we teach retail sales in the house. Knock on the door, whatever we do, go there and run what we call the perfect service call on the sales side and a properly conducted residential sales call on the sales side.
Got it. So people are coming down to Houston to work with you to get that training, or how do you conduct that?
Well, a couple different ways. You know, I do a whole lot of stuff for Service Roundtable and Service Nation, mm-hmm. and they would bring large groups of people to their center there in Dallas. COVID has kind of cut that out, so we're doing that online. I broadcast out of here. I built a broadcast studio. So we do the technician customer communication skills, a program that we call Systems for Success, which is for the managers online. And I'm doing retail sales online as well.
Got it.
So we do it online. We do it at different places. And I do a lot of stuff for train distributors and manufacturers. And they bring me into their customers and or into their locations, and I do the training there as well.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about marketing. So I love this quote of yours. Chris and I were talking about this. It says, "You never make any money in the HVAC business until the day you realize you are a marketing company that provides AC services and not an AC company that only markets to survive." So explain that and tell me how you coach contractors to take on that mindset.
Well, you know, if you take a look at the typical guy, you know, he'll go out there and he'll luck into finding a job. And then he puts the job in or he performs a task. And then he gets done in a day or so and he looks around and says, crap, I don't have another job to go to. You know, so then he spends 3 or 4 days hustling and he finds another job. And then he does the same thing. Where if he put in a marketing program and had people there every day doing something to drive the job so he always has somewhere to go, then he'll be better off. You know, as you work with a lot of companies and they look at what to cut on their budget when things get bad, the first thing they want to do is we'll cut out marketing. We'll just cut that marketing and advertising budget down. And they don't realize that the only thing that's causing the phone to ring is that, and now they're just going to turn the damn phone off and think it's going to get better. So it's not really going to do that, but you have to make an absolute decision that you're going to market every single day. Every single day is marketing day. You know, I've been real lucky here in growing this little company in that I have a lady here named Colleen, and she's been with me for a long time. So she helped me do a lot of stuff up front. And eventually I gave her too much to do. I overwhelmed her and she will do too much sometimes. So we got a marketing person in here. And it gets better. And the more marketing we do, the more calls we can set. The more calls we set, the more money we can make. The more calls we set, the more techs we can hire. You know, and having a place to send them is really important. I mean, why do you want to go into the office one morning and say, hey, you know, I got 8 guys here and no place to go? What the hell do you do then? So if you focus on marketing, you're going to be better off. You know, it's sometimes easier to find the right guys to send out there than it is to find some place for them to go, because I don't care how good they are. If I can't send them to somebody's house, we're not going to make any money.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear you say that, because I find that, I mean, it's no secret about a tech shortage in the industry. And I typically, and now keep in mind, obviously I'm a marketing guy. So I typically think it's harder to find the guys to run the jobs than it is to find the jobs, like the leads. So it's interesting to hear you say that, but I love what you're saying about being a marketing business. We've heard that before, and ironically, I was just on the phone with, I don't know if you know her or not, Joe, but Charlene Irina, who's down in Tampa Bay. I was on the phone with her yesterday, and that's what she says too. Mm-hmm. And she does a phenomenal job of marketing, but it's not just digital marketing. She's out in the community, like doing they do everything. Like, they're super involved, and almost kind of like your mentality in the beginning of just, you know, going out and grinding nonstop, putting in the work and the no zero days methodology that we take on. But you got to do a little bit of mixture of everything. And I think that also you have to be okay with working on your brand. And because that brand equity will start to carry you, you know, far. And listen, if you have it all, if it's all, you know, functioning properly and you're getting, you're getting good lead volume, the follow-up to that is getting it consistently. So that way, when you're hiring, at least you know you can sustain somebody through, you know, when it comes out of the peak seasons into the slower or the shoulder seasons. So I'm a big fan of marketing. Obviously, I think it's a huge piece of success, and I know it's a huge piece of success. So I don't – like, Paul, what's your thoughts on that, man? Like, I know – obviously, you've been in the marketing world too, but, like, kind of where are you at with all that?
Yeah, I'm wanting to know, you know, from a consulting perspective, if someone comes to you and they're in a position where they just are not getting enough at-bats, what are some of the first levers you pull with marketing? Or maybe you can think about your own company. If it cools down a little bit, what are some of the tangible marketing tactics or channels that you will execute on?
Okay, here's one thing that 99% of the companies out there ignore. They don't, you know, during the busiest part of the year, the summertime, they totally ignore the opportunities of the things that they don't fix when they're out there. And they don't record them. Let me give you an example. You call into my house, Paul, and I go out there, and you called in on a no cool call. So I come out to your house, and I look at your system, and I come back to you, and I say, well, I checked your system out, Paul, and your contactors are burned up, your capacitor's weak, your fan motor's overamping, your coil's dirty, your filter's plugged up, and you're low on refrigerant. Now, you as a homeowner who doesn't know anything about air conditioning will say this. Well, how much is it to fix all that, Joe? I say $1,800. And you say, holy shit, that's a lot of money. Do you have to do all that to make it blow cold air? No. I said, Paul, if you put the contactors in, it's a refrigerant, it'll blow cold air. I just don't know how long. Could be a day, could be a week, could be a year. I don't know. And then you'll ask me the only other question that you'll understand. How much for that? $500. So now you take the only two things that you really understand, $1,800 and $500, and they're both going to turn your air conditioner off. And I need new tires on my pickup. So now you buy that $500 solution. Well, just because you didn't want all that stuff done today doesn't mean that you never want it. It just means you didn't want it today because you needed new tires for your pickup, your kid needs braces, whatever, who knows. The biggest mistake they make is this, in their paperwork. They never capture everything they leave. So, you know, if I'm going to tell somebody, here's how to pull the trigger when the phone isn't ringing, that's how you pull the trigger. But if you haven't collected that information all summer, you're screwed. Because do you think your techs are going to remember Paul's house in the middle of July when I ask them, hey, who didn't get stuff fixed? And I'm asking them in October. You know, they don't remember that. And if it's not taken care of on the paperwork or the software, then I don't have anywhere to go because the phone's not ringing. So that is always my number one thing to go through. Mm-hmm. And hopefully some of that stuff is on some invoices because those leads are free. You already got them. The people know you, like you, and trust you. So why the hell aren't you calling them? You know, so you start with that, and then you take, I mean, there's all kinds of avenues you can go through, you know, but a lot of people focus on marketing for new equipment only. Well, that bullseye and that target is really small. Target for service and find the replacements, and you'll find out that you sell a lot more.
So who's doing that well? Like, what kind of strategies?
Who's doing that well?
Yeah, I'm just curious, well, like, you know, if service type, like, with
every... There's a new buzzword that everybody's picked up, and I've been doing this for years, and I put a couple seminars out about 2 or 3 years ago, and I do a couple free ones every year. Everybody's came up with this new rehashing program. Well, I've been rehashing for years.
Isn't it Wally?
So anybody that rehashes successfully, they're doing just what I told you. Now, some of the software programs out there, in fact, most of the software programs do a really poor job of it. Because what you'll find is, even the most sophisticated of the software, if I go in there and my tech does the ticket on his iPad, and I show it all to the customer, say, here's what you need, Chris. And Chris says, okay, do this, do that, do this, do that. Well, when it gets pushed to QuickBooks, the only thing that stays in there is what has a dollar amount attached to it. So Chris, in that case we just talked about, Chris on his invoice will only have his contactors in the refrigerant. All that information that we needed is thrown away. Right. And some of the software makers say, well, we have a workaround for that. Just get your technicians to make a duplicate invoice. He didn't want to make the first fucking invoice. Okay. So
great point.
You think I'm going to get him real happy about making the second one?
Nope.
So, you know, there needs to be an easier way to do it. You know, so print your invoice, put a printer in the truck, but capture that information and start from there. Because I'm going to tell you this, if you came here like in October, you would see people in there calling on these invoices every single day. If you come here in the spring, you see people calling on these invoices. We call them declined repairs, and that's what we rehash for. We rehash for decline repairs, and we rehash sales calls that we've missed. But when we rehash here, we generally send a letter, and then we call after it, so the customer knows we're calling, and it just works. And we have one letter that we use. It's the only letter I've ever seen that got 28% direct response on the direct mail when we combine it with a telemarketing call. So it just works. But you know, if you went around to all the listeners you've got now and asked them, how many of you are really recording all the information and keeping that? Because it should be locked in a safe. It's nothing but gold. And keeping that so you can call back and go out on those calls, you'll be surprised. It's a very, very small number. Now, there's some guys out there who put this stuff in apps and everything else. And, you know, it's a way to automate it, and it's better than not doing it. But I will say this, there's nothing that works like getting on the phone and calling them.
I wish my mechanic would do that.
Yeah.
It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. You know, mechanics do it all the time. You know, if all service industries should do it. That doesn't mean that they don't.
Yeah.
You know, your doctors do it. Your dentist damn sure does, because the dentist is starting to become marketers.
Yep.
Have you had your teeth cleaned today? Do you have this checkup? Do you have that checkup? Come in and get this and you get that. I mean, they're marketing. And you got to follow that plan.
Got it. All right. Let's pull back a little bit. I want to talk about the industry as it relates to high efficiency equipment. You know, you alluded to earlier about taking the $1 million salesperson to a $4 or $5 million salesperson by doing higher efficiency, higher SEER. I'm obsessed with variable speed, modulating, two-stage, all that stuff, but I'm still discouraged at the rate at which my neighbors are hearing about it, right? I hear some companies that do it really well. I hear some of the best companies in the country that do none of it. And I just want your perspective on, you know, is that segment of the market growing? Will it grow? How do you keep your technicians up to speed? It's one thing to find people who can do the basics, but how do you keep up with technology? Let's talk about all that fancy stuff.
Well, you know, you need to get them trained and tell them about it. But, you know, for a retail salesman to move up in that world, he has to understand more than just SEER rating. And unfortunately, that's what most of them understand. You know, they'll come in and say, Paul, you need a new air conditioner. We have a variety of systems. You see, we have a 14, and we have a 16, and we have an 18, and we have a 20. And if you get the 20, it'll save you a whole lot of money on your system. Let me show you how much you'll save. Well, then the guy sits there and he does the numbers thing. You know, well, if I did this, I'd save that. And the numbers don't work. And I have salesmen tell me, well, I penciled it out and the numbers don't work. Okay. Who sent you there on an investment tour? Okay. We're going to make the people more comfortable. Is that why they called you? They didn't come and ask you to analyze their portfolio. So quit that. And stop spending people's money for them. Here's, if you want to sell a lot of multi-speed, variable speed, you have to educate the customers, because the distributors and manufacturers do an extremely poor job of it. I mean, you know, and they put stuff on the radio and TV. Who in the hell understands? You know, the top on our unit will stop 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Well, unless Nolan Ryan's coming to have lunch for you, why do you give a shit? You know, so... So the thing about it is, we're in the house and we're going to talk about comfort. And here's where the guys miss the boat. When they do a heat load. Heat loads are what sells variable speed, multiple speed, higher efficiency, all that technology. And I'm going to tell you how you do it. You have to do a heat load every time. So let's say I'm in Houston, Texas, and I go out on a sales presentation and I make my heat load and I say, Chris, according to the heat load, you need a 4-ton air conditioning system. And that will take care of your house right there. And he'll look at it and he won't know what that means. And then you say this. Now, I do a heat load by hand because there's things in there I need to talk to this customer about. The most important thing is design temperature, because they won't know what that means. To tell you the truth, a lot of contractors don't know what the hell it means. But let me tell you how I did this heat load, Chris. When we sat down, remember I told you we were designing the air conditioning system that would keep your family cool and comfortable when it's hot as 98 degrees here in Houston? Remember that? And he'll remember it because I wrote it down and I circled it so he'd see it. I said, you know what? That's the same thing I did when I did my house too. I designed an air conditioner to keep my house nice and cool and comfortable when it's as hot as 98 degrees. But then I got to thinking, it's really not 98 degrees every day here in the summer, is it, Chris? So here's what I did. I went on the National Climatic Data Center, and I found out that it only gets to 98 degrees 7 days out of the year in Houston. And out of those 7 days, it only stays there about 5 hours a day. So what we did at my house is just like I did at your house. I designed the perfect air conditioner for you 35 hours out of the year. You're going to be perfect. But the rest of the year, you're going to have one that's too big, because I looked up the average summertime temperature and I found out that our average summertime temperature is only 79. And we have a whole lot more 79 degree temperatures than 98, don't we? So I did two heat loads. I did one at 98. I did the other one at 79. Let me show you what I found. I pulled one out and I show them. Say, here at 98, I needed, just like you, 4 tons. But at 79, I only needed 2 tons. That kind of told me that everybody should probably have 2 air conditioning systems in their house, shouldn't they, Chris? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm never going to try and sell you two air conditioning systems, but that's why I'm so excited about this technology. Let me show you how it works. And I show them. If you set it up that way, you're going to move your product mix from 60 and 70% 14, 15, 16 or less single speed stuff. And you'll just completely reverse that switch. And the 18s here, and the thing is that the multi-speed guys, you got to have some better installers, because the installations are getting a little more complicated. The communicating systems are getting a little more complicated. Right. But if you've got the guys that can do it, it's not hard to do it. You just have to do it. And it's the one thing none of your competitors will tell.
How many contractors are doing a heat load? Ballpark percentage of.
Like, not very damn many. That's a metric.
Yeah, it's pretty low. You say you're doing yours by hand. Do you have a favorite software that our listeners could refer to?
I don't do software on there, and I'll tell you why. The heat load is part of my presentation, you know, and I use the Train 1-page paper heat load. A lot of guys, they say, we want to get away from paper. What the hell for? Paper's a renewable product. Farmers make money growing trees. What the fuck, you hate farmers? Paper is okay. You can really use paper. But the thing about it is, once you learn how to do it, it only takes you 20 minutes. But the thing about it is, here's the deal. Up at the top, I have to write Chris's name and his number and tell him what his design temperatures are, summer and winter. That sets the stage for doing what you're doing. Then you come down. Nobody else has done this. Guy come in and said, how many square feet do you have in your house? Chris says 2,000. Okay, well, it's 400 square feet a ton. I guess you need a 5-ton. Air doesn't come in square feet. Who the hell ever told him that shit? Air comes in volumetric measurements, cubic feet. Because if that worked that way, if I had a 2,000 square foot house, he has a 2,000 square foot house. I got 10-foot ceilings. He's got 8. We'd still need the same amount of air. We don't. We don't. That's why you have to do it. You can't do it by square feet. You ever gone to? You can't buy milk by the square feet either. You ever go and ask for 5 square feet of milk? You can't get that. That's volumetric.
Gosh, we're just getting warmed up.
I have to know how much air is in this house. So not only that, I have to know where my windows are in this house. And the good thing about the train one, it breaks down all your windows. And, you know, you've got all your factors in there. So I can show Chris. I said, look, let me show you something really cool, Chris. We're going to take all the north windows and we're going to put them here. You have this many feet of windows on the north side. We multiply it by this number. And all the south windows go here. And all the east and west, we put them together. But the multiplier is a lot higher. You know why? No, why? Well, where does the sun come up every day, Chris? And say, in the east, where does it go down? In the west. How many days a year does it do that? Like every damn one, right? So we're always going to have the sun beating on the east and west more. See, if I took your house and I turned it this way, you wouldn't need as much air. So if a guy come in here and just told you without even knowing this, he'd be taking advantage of you, wouldn't he? See, the heat load allows you to do so many things. But then you got the guys on the computer. I got one. I had a guy tell me at ASHRAE one time, not ASHRAE, but the big ACA meeting in Nashville up there. He came up to me and showed me this whole thing. He said, look at this. I can do a heat load in 18 seconds. Well, who the hell does that make happy? 18 seconds? When I was 16 years old, there was a whole lot of things I could do in 18 seconds, but I was the only one happy about it.
This is amazing.
So take your time and do that. You know, everybody tries to how long does it take you to run? I want to do a 30-minute presentation. You can't do a 30-minute presentation. You got to take the time to do it. And the heat load is what sets you apart. Now, you only have to do the second heat load one time. That's at your house.
Oh, God, this is fantastic. But, dude, Joe's on one. Joe,
I really like
on
this
one.
Oh, man. That I just had to get so you warmed good. Up a little bit. All right. Let's, for the sake of time, I guess we have to get.
How far in are we, guys? We're like 55 minutes in. I lost track of like the last 20 because Joe was on one, man. That was fantastic.
For those who aren't watching on YouTube, Chris and I have our microphones on mute, just laughing our faces off at letting Joe just preach. It's but I hear you loud and clear. So designing for design temperature and doing a hand load, I hear you loud and clear. That's an overlooked art.
But heat load.
So let's talk about a couple closing questions here. Joe, tell us about the Technical Arts Center.
Okay, the Technical Arts Center is a training facility that we have here in Houston, and we have what we call the Fast Track Program. And, you know, the extreme shortage of techs today make this program more important than it's ever been. You know, I can take a guy, if he can spell AC and has any technical competency at all, I don't ask him to spell furnace, there's too many letters, but AC will do it. And in 9 days, I can turn him into a pretty damn good maintenance tech. He'll go out in the field. He'll understand sequence of operation. He'll know how to use his gauges. He'll know how to use his meters. He'll know how to figure subcool and superheat. He will also know, since he understands sequence of operation, how to do basic troubleshooting. We give him his 608 EPA test here. So if he has any snap at all, he's going to pass it. And he will be ready to put in a truck at your place. So that's our basic program. We also have an advanced air conditioning class. So it's kind of like a career path. You send me a tech and we send him through the 9-day class. And then he makes it through the spring or makes it through the fall and summer's coming. You can send him to advanced AC tech class, which is a 3-day class. And then we have an advanced heating class, which is a 3-day class, and an advanced troubleshooting class. And if they go to all those classes, you'll build a tech in 16 months. It would normally take 5 years. So that's what we do here. Now, due to COVID, I had so many requests for online classes that I've also taken that class and broken it down. So we've done it now two or three times. And I broadcast two times a day on it. We do 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for four consecutive weeks. But if a company signs up for that program, I send them a set of plans so they can build their own training lab at their place. So their guys have the same thing we're working on. Takes just typical carpentry skills. I ask them not to use brand new equipment in it. You know, just put something together that can be made to run. Because when I send a tech out in the field, he's not going to work on all brand new equipment. He's going to work on stuff that's been out there for a while. So they put all that together, and then we go online and we do it. I broadcast at 7 o'clock in the morning Central, so we get the East Coast and Central guys. And I broadcast at 9:30, so I Central time, so I get the Rocky Mountain and the West Coast guys at a reasonable hour. They're in there for 2 hours, and every day at the end of the class, they send me what we call a personal learning experience that tells me, here's what I learned that I think will help me most. Here's what I learned that I didn't know before. And here's what we went over that I think we need to review because I didn't understand it. So it's kind of like a no tech left behind deal. So we don't go forward. If you didn't get 24 volt wiring, okay, we're not going anywhere until everybody gets 24 volt wiring. Every day starts with a little review and then we go forward. Every night you got a little bit of homework. Now we can't give the EPA test on the online classes because that's a proctored test. They have to physically be here. I can't proctor them online. So we've started doing that as well. And some pretty amazing things have happened here in Houston. I've been having people ask me to do local classes. And there's this guy, if you look him up, he's one of the most amazing guys in the world. His name is Jim McInvale. He owns a company called Gallery Furniture. And he grown from nothing to a multi-million dollar corporation with four different locations. He gives more back to the city of Houston than anybody else. He flies entire airplanes full of vets to the World Series and to the Super Bowl. He does some amazing things, but he's done it all because he's grown his business the right way. And I met him a long time ago, and to do a local school, I needed to get in with Texas Workforce Commission. And I knew he knew somebody there. So I just stopped on it in on a whim one day. And he said, well, you know what? We're doing a trade school too. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing air conditioning and we've added plumbing to it as well. And he said, well, you know what? Here's the guy that runs our school. We don't have room to do it here, but we want to do it. Maybe you could partner with us. So now we're getting ready to partner with them. And what that does for us, and most states have this program that, and a lot of people don't know about it with this tech shortage, is they have a training program set up in their state where they will pay to train the guys. And then after they get out, they have an OJT program where you can hire these techs that just got out and they'll pay up to 75% of their salary for 6 months. It's the most amazing program I've ever seen. So we're getting ready to be involved in that as well here at the trade school. And that's why we're in the middle of moving. We needed a different location. So that's kind of the Technical Arts Center in a nutshell.
Well, I think it's I like the shift that's kind of happening with at least COVID. It has allowed us to, we had to change up kind of how we did business, but I kind of like the mixture of, you know, face-to-face versus virtual, like whatever. I think it's going to be, well, it's far more efficient, but not, you know, like, especially because we're in such a relational business, like this is a very relational business, but it's nice to be able to break that thing up a little bit. But I love that you do it. You're so involved in it. I love the last 25 minutes of this podcast the most, just because I felt like you were on it and the passion was pouring out of you. And we got like raw Joe Cunningham in the last 25 minutes. That was fantastic. So you said a couple of things that I want to hit back on. I think we're getting pretty close to an hour on the podcast, which is about people's capacity. But a couple of things you said, one, quotes and hopes was something I heard you say, professional visitor. I've never heard that. I've never heard professional visitor before, so that was something new to me. Design temperature, also something I've not heard of. And again, obviously, maybe somebody else heard, just not me. And then heat load. Heat load is something that I have, I knew nothing about. Of course, I don't come from the technical side of things at all. But that's something I've never heard about, is the heat load side of it. But I would also say, one thing I did appreciate is you call them windy units, which is... Mm-hmm. Which is what my grandpa used to call it, ours, because He didn't ever say Winda. He didn't say Windo. He called them Windy. Windy units. Cricks and mm-hmm. Windy units.
And washing machines.
And washing machines. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for coming on here, man. We appreciate it. Would you mind, real quick, if anybody listening wants to reach out to you directly, just sharing the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Sure. I'm going to give you both my email address and my cell phone number.
Perfect.
Email address is Joe, J-O-E, 9152, at Verizon.net. And my cell phone number, because that's the easiest way to reach me, is 318-286-7742.
Perfect. And we'll share that in the post as well. But hey, Joe, I mean, I appreciate you giving us, you know, an hour of your time and, you know, and sharing all these years of your knowledge and wisdom and training and consulting and tactics and all this fun stuff. So, listeners, hopefully you got as much out of that as I did. Like I said, I felt like that last, you know, the last 25 minutes of that podcast was fire for me. Oh, yeah. I mean, I love whenever I hear somebody's passion coming out, it always makes it so much more entertaining. So Joe, thank you so much, man, for giving us your time. I appreciate you.
No problem, Chris. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
You are most welcome. We thank you. And I want to go ahead and end this like I normally do, too. And Paul, I'll go ahead and read this one since I think you did the last one. But I will the review. Sure. We got a 5-star review from Jeremy Beatty. And it says, episode 76. Do you remember what episode that was, Paul? Don't cheat. Don't look at the sheet. 76?
I do. It was Tools and Tiaras.
That's it.
Doodling.
That's it. It says, excitingly, our company, Beatty Brothers Heating and Cooling, just joined the Rhino family. Sweet.
Welcome
to the family. I was telling Jeff Boab, our director of business development, recently that I've listened to every episode of To The Point and jokingly told him that I feel like Paul and Chris have already been like distant cousins to me for 2 years. Very cool. Over the past 2 years, I've listened to every Tommy Mello podcast, friend of ours out here in Phoenix. Uncountable hours of Gary Vee. I've watched and listened to the majority of every single podcast out there with every big name and has anything to do with our trades, entrepreneurship, business, etc. The episode, number 76, was one of them. It was one of, if not the most, enjoyable podcasts I've listened to. As a father of a daughter, it is very encouraging to see the things that this lady is doing for young girls. The world spends too much time telling people that they aren't supposed to do something, air quotes, instead of encouraging them to break a mold. I love that. We need to build people by giving them confidence, independence, and power, tools and tiaras for the win 100. So thanks, Jeremy Beatty. I agree. Nice. I have 3 daughters, so I appreciate that. So listeners, again, we always love when you leave these reviews like this. Obviously, it lets me and Tall Paul and the rest of the podcast crew know exactly, you know, what the end result is, and that is to give back to you. And hopefully you can take these things and implement them like quotes and hopes and design temperature and heat load. Joe, again, appreciate you so much. Tall Paul, appreciate you so much. Listeners, we appreciate you so much. Please do not hesitate to reach out to Joe. Guy's got a ton of knowledge, and I'm sure he can share much more with you if you need his help. Until next time, we'll see you. Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a Rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe, and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put, so keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review, and be honest, and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you. Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.